May it please the court, my name is Patrick Hinson, attorney registration number 42576, appearing on behalf of Mr. Alan Garcia. Before I begin, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if I could. Now, because the government concedes that Mr. Garcia's aggravated robbery convictions and conspiracy convictions are multiplicitous, this case is primarily about a trial court's discretion to enter concurrent sentences for crimes of violence when the evidence supporting those convictions is identical. But this case is also about which aggravated robbery and conspiracy convictions this court should vacate as a result of the multiplicitous convictions. To begin, I want to summarize the facts in this case. At trial, it was alleged that Mr. Garcia and two of his friends, we'll call this group A, got in a confrontation with another group of four teenage boys, call this group Group B. Now, after this brief confrontation, Group A left, came back with a fourth member named Antoine Hines. And during the second confrontation, it was alleged that Mr. Hines pointed a gun at Group B and demanded that the group B, hand over their shoes. With regard to Mr. Garcia, his alleged involvement was that he shielded the view of Mr. Hines as he pointed the gun at Group B. And that was the extent of his alleged involvement. And he was 18 years old at the time, and now the government wants to essentially change his sentence from 10 years to 45 years. As I said before, because the government concedes that Mr. Garcia's aggravated robbery and conspiracy convictions are multiplicitous, I'm going to move on and address the primary point, which is that whether or not the trial court had discretion to enter concurrent sentences for crimes of violence when the evidence supporting those crimes is identical. The general rule for crimes of violence is that a person convicted of two or more separate crimes of violence arising out of the same incident shall be sentenced for such crimes so that they are run consecutively. CRS 18-1408-3, however, provides an exception, and that is when two or more offenses are charged and supported by identical evidence, then the sentences shall run concurrent.
So, counsel, help me out here, because you keep saying identical evidence, and that's really a critical issue, obviously. Absolutely. Why is it identical evidence here?
Well, the question is, what does it mean to be identical evidence? Pursuant to People v. Torres, it says that courts, when determining whether multiple crimes are supported by identical evidence, don't use a strict elements test or something of that nature, but instead they should focus on the criminal act itself, how many criminal acts were actually involved. So in this case, there was one criminal act, the act of shielding the view of Mr. Hines.
Let me interrupt for just a moment. If you assume that the conviction is on a complicity theory, wouldn't you also need to focus on what the actions were of, in this case, the gunman?
Agreed. So with regard to the convictions under counts 1 through 4, it was the complicity theory of liability. So you would have to focus on the actions of the gunman, but he still only committed one act, one criminal act. He pointed the gun at Group B and said, hand over your shoes. He did not go up to Victim A, hand over your shoes, Victim B, hand over your shoes, Victim C. So with regard to the criminal act itself, there was but one act, and that one act was the basis for essentially all 8 convictions. So with regard to Mr. Garcia, there was one act. With regard to Mr. Hines, who was the gunman, there was one act. So based on that, there was identical evidence in this case, allowing the district court judge to sentence concurrently. Another point I wanted to address is that the government in its pleadings argues that whenever there are multiple victims, there's necessarily not identical evidence, that it would require unique evidence for each victim. The statute itself seems to indicate otherwise. The second half of 18-1408-3 states that where there are multiple victims involved and identical evidence, the court may, within its discretion, impose consecutive sentences. So there's essentially a three-tier system. Crimes of violence, always consecutive. Identical evidence, always concurrent. When there's multiple victims and identical evidence, the trial court is granted discretion to either sentence concurrently or consecutively. I want to move on to the second point, which is that because the government concedes that the convictions are multiplicitous, which of Mr. Garcia's aggravated robbery and conspiracy convictions must be vacated? With regard to the 8 counts of aggravated robbery, 4 of them were entered under subsection B of the aggravated robbery statute, and 4 of them were entered under subsection C. Now, to remedy duplicative convictions, reviewing courts usually just vacate the duplicative conviction, but in this case, we have to determine what the duplicative conviction is and which one will maximize the effect of the jury's verdict to yield as many convictions as possible, is the language from People v. Beagle. So it seems that the focus in that case was on maximizing the quantity of convictions. With regard to Mr. Garcia, no matter which of his convictions are vacated, he still ends up with 5. Thus, it's our position that the convictions under subsection C should remain, and the convictions under subsection B should be vacated, and the reason being simply that it more accurately describes the facts as they were presented at trial and the jury's findings on their special interrogatories. With regard to the counts under subsection B, the jury was given a special interrogatory, and in that they found that he did not violate the letter of the law, subsection B himself, but instead it was through a complicity theory of liability. With regard to subsection C, which contemplates the use of a confederate in aggravated robbery, they were given a special interrogatory and did in fact find that is what happened. So for that reason, we think subsection C are the convictions that should stand, and subsection B are convictions that should be vacated. The effect that has is that the conspiracy conviction under subsection C is a statutory crime of violence. At trial, the government did not plead and prove that, the statutory crime of violence sentence enhancer, so it would impact the sentence to a degree. It would make that not subject to the crimes of violence sentence enhancer because it's not pled and proved, which would allow the district court's sentence to stand.
May I ask you a question about your argument then about the sentences to be vacated? You said that the quantity of convictions is what we should be looking at, but there are also other considerations other than the quantity, such as the length of the sentence, and perhaps I'd like to hear your view, other consequences of the...
Sure. There is case law in which they want to maximize not only the amount of convictions, but the effect of those convictions. But really, I think the spirit of the law in this area is that you're trying to give the jury's verdict the most respect, to make it have the most impact on the sentence received, and which is why we think the special interrogatories are important in this case. It's because that is what the jury found, and subsection B, they found under the convictions under subsection B, found that they did not necessarily apply but through a complicity theory of liability. So in order to maximize the jury's verdict and to respect what their findings were in the special interrogatories, that's why we believe subsection C should stand.
So you don't think it reads maximizing the sentences?
Not
the focus needs to be on the verdict?
No. Correct. It seems that in cases, there are situations in which the court has found that it was appropriate to do so to maximize the sentence, but that's not necessarily what the focus is about. It's about respecting the jury's verdict. And with that being said, I'd like to reserve any time left for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My guess is this is up here because these are malfunctioning.
Maybe I should ask.
I apologize before you get started. We're noticing that our individual clocks aren't running and we have this one clock. Is my assumption correct that our individual clocks are not functioning?
Maybe not, Your Honor. I heard something about this problem the other day. We didn't realize this was put beyond. We thought that since the main clock was working, everything was okay. Apparently, a session was interrupted the other day to fix something with the clocks. If you'd like, we could try to do that.
We can see it from here.
And you can see it if they want.
Okay. And is the clock on the podium working?
Yes.
It was.
It is. Okay. All right. I think we're fine. We'll hopefully fix the glitch. sometime between now and when the next division needs to use the courtroom. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jennifer Gilbert, and I represent the people on the cross appeal in this case. Crimes of violence committed against more than one victim require consecutive sentencing as separate crimes of violence under the statute. This would be similar to if a person asks a friend to put a bomb on the plane, the bomb explodes, there's multiple victims. We don't hold the person who asked his friend to put the bomb on the plane accountable for just one of those victims. We hold them accountable for all of the victims. That's the case here. We have multiple victims for one crime of violence, and thus they are separate crimes of violence under the statute. And that's what's really at issue here, the interplay between separate and the crime of violence statute and identical in the concurrent sentencing statute.
Could you speak a little bit about whether the evidence here is in fact identical?
The evidence isn't identical because there are multiple victims, and thus there were multiple things stolen from those victims. So each victim separately had to have his personal items stolen. Each boy had his separate shoes, money, and food stolen in order for there to be separate counts.
Do you look to the acts of the defendant and the principal?
That's what the defendant would have you look to, but in this case, what the crime of violence statute actually requires is that you look to whether the crimes are separate. And where this comes in, the trial court relied on a case called Jewell to find that you look to the crimes or the actions of the defendant. But in that case, the crimes were only committed against one victim that the court was looking to. So they weren't looking to the multiple crimes against the multiple victims. In 4083, which is where the interplay with the identical language comes, that is where you get the except for where multiple victims in the court may at its discretion sentence consecutively. That language was added in 1985. There was a Colorado Court of Appeals case just 1 year prior called Cullen. In that Court of Appeals case, they said where there are multiple victims, the evidence is not identical. It can't be because multiple victims are in fact separate evidence and thus not identical evidence for the purposes of concurrent sentencing.
Sorry to interrupt. Are you arguing then that you can never have a circumstance where there are multiple victims where it is one act?
There can be one act, but there are still multiple victims, such as in the bomb example, or as occurred here, where there is the one act of robbing each of these children individually, but the multiple victims are what allow for there to be separate charges. If there weren't four victims there, you couldn't have four aggravated robbery counts. What allows for those four charges is, in fact, that there are four separate victims, which was the case here. And going back to the Cullen, what happened is within a year, less than a year, the legislature didn't overturn Cullen. They didn't say Cullen's wrong. Instead, they adopted it by saying, yeah, that's right. When there are multiple victims, we're going to allow you to sentence consecutively at your discretion because multiple victims are, in fact, not identical evidence under the statute. And
I was going to ask what you do with that discretionary language that came in that clause. I mean, it's filled with discretionary language. It says where multiple victims are involved, the court may, within its discretion, impose consecutive sentences. Doesn't that mean it can also impose concurrent sentences?
And under 4083, that's a discretionary sentencing statute. So when the court in People v. Hahn, which was in 1991, I believe, adopted the interpretation of identical from the discretionary sentencing statute of 18.1408 and applied it to 18.1.3406, it didn't carry over the discretionary. It's still mandatory sentencing under 1.3406. So the interpretations that look at it's discretionary to impose consecutive sentencing are looking at it under the aspect of the discretionary statute of 18.1408. So those interpretations look at when something may be concurrent consecutive within discretion. 18.1.3406 instead says that there's mandatory shall sentence consecutively where there is a separate crime of violence. So in those instances where it is not identical evidence, where it is in fact a separate crime, 18.1.3406 takes away the discretion of the court. It's a mandatory sentencing mandatory consecutive sentencing statute.
Do you see that there's a conflict between the two statutes?
I don't see a conflict between those two statutes, because when in People v. Hahn, they determined that they were going to borrow the definition from identical to determine what separate meant. They didn't find that there was a conflict between the two. Instead, they determined that they were going to adopt interpretations of identical that had been made prior to that and apply them to the separate language. That didn't create a conflict between whether they're discretionary or mandatory. It just meant in determining whether mandatory consecutive sentencing would be proper, they were going to look to whether it was identical under 18.1408. And so in this case, it's separate. And it's separate because there's multiple victims, which under 1408.3, 18.1408.3 is itself not identical. Thus, because it's separate, once you're done determining whether it's identical or separate, you're then in just the crime of violence sentencing statute. At that point, you've made the only determination of the interplay between the two. Once it's determined that it is in fact a separate crime of violence, then you are only in 18.1.3406, where it says crimes of violence shall be sentenced concurrently, or consecutively rather than concurrently. So in this case, as soon as it's determined that the evidence isn't identical, because there are four separate victims who had four separate items stolen, and the aggravated robbery as to each of those victims is in fact a separate crime of violence, then the sentences shall run consecutively. And that's been determined that the legislative intent behind consecutive sentencing, which was actually enacted at the same time as the language in 18.1408.3 regarding the multiple victims, or the discretion as to multiple victims, both of those were enacted in the same legislative bill. But when that was enacted, or it's been interpreted that each and every crime of violence shall run consecutively, that was the intent.
So maybe you've answered this along the way, but so when does that discretionary language in 18.1408.3 apply?
The discretionary language in 18.1408.3 applies when it's not a crime of violence. So in an instance where you don't have a per se or statutory crime of violence, or in other sentencing areas that aren't related to this particular statute. And in those instances, then if you have an identical evidence, the sentences must run concurrently. If that's only mandatory, that's the only mandatory sentencing within 18.1408. Aside from that, under 18.1408.3, if there are multiple victims, if the evidence isn't identical to the crimes, in any of the situations where you have something that is not exactly the same, then those sentences may be ordered consecutive or concurrent at the discretion of the court. So it allows the court much discretion in deciding how they are going to sentence. The only time it says it's mandatory concurrent sentencing is when there is only one victim and any other evidence of the crime is also the same. And at that point in time, there's not discretion. That's different from 18.1.3406, where there is no discretion to sentence concurrently, except for where all of the evidence is identical.
If we were to focus on the acts of the defendant and the principal, are there different acts directed to the different victims? I know you're saying that where there are multiple victims, by definition, it's not identical. But if you did focus on the acts, what does the trial record indicate?
The trial record actually is different at sentencing versus at trial, and that's because there's...
Don't we have to focus on the trial evidence?
We do have to focus on the trial evidence, and here the trial court found that there was different evidence as to each victim because each victim... Or as to the defendant, because the defendant pointed the gun at the victim separately and found that there were different acts. The sentencing court was a different judge at that point in time, so he found that there was no distinct separate evidence. But at trial, the trial court did find that there was distinct separate evidence, and also that the defendant himself had committed distinct separate evidence under the conspiracy theory that created the aggravated robbery counts under 1C. So under the aggravated robbery 1B, the complicity, the person with whom the defendant was complicit had separate actions, and then the trial court also found that once under 1C, the conspiracy version of aggravated robbery that was applied here, the defendant himself had committed separate acts as to each of them.
Can you remind us what the separate acts were that supported the conspiracy claim?
The separate acts for the conspiracy were that there were three times that the defendant came back. He went out of the McDonald's, came back a second time, went out of the McDonald's, came back a third time, and the third time that he and his two other friends came back, they brought the man with the gun. They gathered around him at the table where the four boys were sitting, and that's when he woke up. So in this case, there is separate evidence from the conspiracy, and that gets to another point I would like to address. The trial court found that the conspiracy could run concurrently instead of consecutively. Even if this court finds that the sentences should not run consecutively as to the aggravated robbery, because there was separate and distinct evidence of conspiracy, the crime of violence conspiracy statute should run consecutively to the sentences of the crime, or to the crime of violence sentences under the aggravated robbery, because there was in fact different evidence at trial to support that. And that gets to the maximum effect of the jury's verdict. There's actually been a recent case that came out of the Court of Appeals. It's People v. Carter, and that's 12 COA 857. In that case, the court held that the goal is to maximize the jury's verdict, so you affirm the conviction that's the crime of violence. So responding to which conspiracy count should enter in that court, they found that you support, or you affirm the one that maximizes the verdict by affirming the crime of violence sentences. And getting back to the legislative intent of 18.1.3406, it's been held separately in Voibles and Ellis that in order to actually affect the legislative intent, this isn't an ambiguous statute. Every crime of violence statute, or every crime of violence, is in fact separate and must be sentenced consecutively, and the legislative intent was that each and every one run consecutively. There has been discussion between the courts over the course of the last few decades as to whether the intent of that was because multiple crimes of violence in one incident were in fact more criminally culpable. The multiple crimes of violence created or committed over multiple or over a longer time period. The court in Marquez, which is cited in the briefs, said that the intent behind the legislative intent that was actually at issue here was courts were tending to sentence consecutive or crimes of violence that occurred in one incident concurrently. And the legislature didn't like that. They wanted crimes of violence that occurred in one incident to be sentenced consecutively, as they were tending to be sentenced in separate incidents. So what the legislature did is they mandated that a trial court must sentence consecutively when there's more than one crime of violence that's committed in one incident. And that's what we have here. So the legislative intent, not only is it not ambiguous, but even if you do look to the legislature's actual language, the legislature here intended that these crimes that occurred here should be sentenced consecutively. And because of that, I would ask that you hold that that crimes of violence committed against different victims are in fact separate and must be sentenced consecutively under the statute. If there are no further questions, I will turn it over to my co-counsel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Rebecca Adams, registration number 31044, represents People. I'll just take the little time that I have left just to briefly address the defendant's arguments that his convictions for aggravated robbery under subsection 1B are somehow inconsistent with the jury's finding on the special interrogatory. Because the defendant was convicted under a complicity theory under subsection 1B, the jury's verdict of guilty under that subsection is not inconsistent with the jury's finding on the special interrogatory that the defendant did not use or possess or threaten the use of a deadly weapon during the commission of the offense. So in order to maximize the jury's verdict here, the court needs to consider not only the number of offenses, but the severity of those offenses, including the fact that the convictions under subsection 1B are crimes of violence, as well as the potential sentence imposed under those convictions. So in in merging the defendant's convictions, there's no inconsistency between the convictions under subsection 1B and the special interrogatory. And because the convictions under subsection 1B are per se crimes of violence, as well as the conspiracy conviction with respect to those counts, the defendant's convictions under subsection 1C should merge into subsections 1B. If the court has no further questions, thank you.
Thank you. I want to pick up on the government's argument that there's something special about the crime of violence statute that makes it incompatible with CRS 18-1483. The case law just simply doesn't bear that out. There's a list of cases, including People v. O'Shaughnessy, where the court has found that the first clause of 18-1483, those were crimes of violence and they were identical evidence, one victim, granted, but there was nothing in the nature of 18-1483 that made it incompatible with the crime of violence statutes. So there's already precedent set where there are crimes of violence based on identical evidence, and the court was not required to sentence consecutive sentences. In fact, it was the opposite. They were required to sentence concurrent sentences because it was based on identical evidence with one victim. And there's nothing special about the second half of 18-1483 either that would make it incongruous. But the people's brief, I guess, essentially concedes such. It concedes that there is cases that exist from this division of this court where the crime of violence statute was required to yield to 18-1483, and concurrent sentences were required to be imposed. Second thing I wanted to address about the government's argument is that seemed to be that they were arguing that there should not be four separate crimes. It was never a position that there should not be four separate convictions for aggravated robbery. Our position is whether or not a trial court still has the discretion to enter concurrent sentences when there's identical evidence. So our dispute never was that there should not be four separate convictions, but instead whether the court maintains that discretion. The categorical approach to where there's this equivocation where there's multiple victims, therefore there's not identical evidence. That would nullify the second half of 18-1483. It would essentially render it meaningless if that were the approach taken. Multiple victims always means that there's not identical evidence. So the approach to ask the court to do that would ask the court to nullify the second half of 18-1483.
Mr. Henson, may I ask you a question about the distinct and separate evidence for the conspiracy?
Absolutely. So with regard to subsection B, the convictions under subsection B, it was a per se crime of violence, and if the convictions under subsection B were not vacated, they would have to be run consecutive because there was distinct evidence. But that's why our position is that the convictions under subsection C should remain, because the crime of violence sentence enhancer was not pled and proved as a statutory crime of violence, which the convictions under subsection C are statutory crimes of violence. So it was necessary for the government at trial to plead and prove the statutory crime of violence sentence enhancer, which they did not do, which would allow the judge's 10-year sentence to stay in effect because the convictions for conspiracy under subsection C are not subject to the crime of violence sentence enhanced. The next thing I wanted to address about was a factual question whether or not there were four criminal acts committed. And I believe the government argued that the court found that there were four criminal acts committed. I don't think that's what the record reflects. I think that the record reflects that he robbed four individuals, but not that he did four criminal acts to commit that. Essentially, it was one group of people where he said, hand over your shoes. As I noted before, he didn't go up and individually rob each victim. And lastly, I guess I wanted to address whether or not the convictions under subsection B or subsection C should be vacated one more time. And it's not that the convictions under subsection B are inconsistent, the jury was within its right to find a complicity theory of liability and hold Mr. Garcia liable under that complicity theory, which more accurately reflects, more closely reflects, the evidence that was presented at trial and what the jury found in the special interrogatory. That's why we lean towards subsection C, is because it more closely reflects the testimony at trial and what the jury found in the special interrogatory. And if there are no other questions, that is all I have.
I have one other question, which relates to the Ellis case.
Mm-hmm.
And your argument having to do with the fact that the district attorney didn't separately plead the crime of violence.
Correct.
Charge, that precludes them from doing that now.
Right. So with regard to all the aggravated robbery convictions under subsection C, the government did plead and prove that they were crimes of violence. It's only with regard to the conspiracy count that they did not submit that special interrogatory and have them plead and have the jury find that it was a crime of violence. So that's why I believe that it should, it's not subject to the mandatory consecutive sentencing pursuant to the crime of violence statute. No further questions, that is all I have. Thank you.
Thank you for your arguments, and an opinion will issue in the case in due course. Thank you very much.